Q and Review, celebrating 40 years of audio production, welcomes you to this week's edition of the Glasgow Times Sports Podcast. Recorded from our studio in the Bishopbriggs Media Centre and by our volunteers working from home. Keep up to date with Q and Review news via our Facebook, X, formerly known as Twitter, or Instagram at Q and Review, that's @CUE. ANDREVIEW, or get in touch with us directly by emailing information@qnreview.com. That's information@CUEANDREVIEW.com, or by calling us on 0141 772 3979. Please like and share our podcast and give us constructive feedback.
Evening Times Sport, March 19. Clermont fighting fit for Rangers title explosion. Report by Graeme McGarry. Philippe Clermont has learned quickly that life in Glasgow as manager of Rangers, or indeed Celtic, is marked by extremes. Right now, having dragged Rangers up by the bootstraps and right into the heart of a title race, he is loved by one half of the city. The other half, predictably, have not been shy in showing him exactly what they think of him either. Thankfully, the Belgian is a master at retaining his focus on the task at hand, and whether it be abusive Celtic punters or well-meaning Rangers fans that want a slice of him, he is adept at putting on the blinkers. It is one of the great managerial clichés that they avoid watching opposition matches or following the results of their direct rivals too closely. But that is another thing that Clermont has mastered by instead lasering in on his strict fitness regime. Clermont will be 50 on Friday, but he has rediscovered his passion for exercise since coming to Scotland, something which aids his clarity of thought while also giving him a distraction from what might be going on elsewhere. Take, for instance, one Sunday a few weeks back when Celtic played Motherwell at Fir Park, a day after Rangers had demolished Hearts at Ibrox. The Steelmen were holding the champions at 1-1 until stoppage time, but Clermont was trying, not altogether successfully, to keep his focus on his fitness programme. Said Clermont, "I was in the gym. Though people would come and try to show me what the result is, and I had to tell them, I'm not looking, I'm doing my gym now. So no, I'm not watching those games, not before us or after us. I watch all the games, all the highlights of the games, and I look at opponents before we play them. But I'm not sitting at home watching Celtic or Hearts or whatever. I forgot that part of staying fit after my career. I was working really hard in the beginning as an assistant, and also if there was a player injured or something, then the coach would use me as an extra player. I did that for a few years until I got too much pain in my hip and I had an operation, and afterwards it was too dangerous to take those risks. So I didn't do it anymore, and in all of the work I forgot myself. And I didn't do almost anything anymore until this period. From July until I came here, I had much more time and I started to do sport again. I just felt that is my life, and for my body and my mind, it is also much better. Sport has always been my passion, so now I have the gym, or it could also be 1 hour of running or something. Those are the moments I can really relax and enjoy. For me, it is a really enjoyable moment. Clermont would like to see a little more of the country he now calls home, as his assistant manager Stefan van der Heijden has been, but knows that his profile makes that difficult, something he is reminded of whatever he does venture out. It's a different role, he said. We've been assistants before together with Michelle Proudhelm, and back then I could also do more things. Now I cannot, but I don't regret it. It's my life, it's my passion, it's what I chose. There's a difference between a manager and an assistant. That's normal. Not all the time are people respectful, but not major things. The worst thing is you get the middle finger from people or something, but I don't mind. I would not recommend it to my children, but if people feel better doing that, then it's their thing. It's not my problem. Except, of course, when he is in the company of his wife, though he says Mrs. Clement can handle herself. And he laughed. Yeah, but I feel the difference when she is with me. People keep more distance, so I keep her close. Any hassle that Clement has had on the street has been more than offset by the adulation he has received from the Rangers' support. With the synergy between the team, the Ibrox crowd, and the dugout a factor that he continually references when explaining their upturn in fortunes. And he is determined to repay that support by delivering what every one of them craves, a Premiership title party at Ibrox come mid-May. He said, "There is a lot of love from both sides. I love them also, and I told you guys, this is what I missed. To have this support and this energy, the atmosphere in the stadium is brilliant. People are supporting the team all the time. And you also see the interactivity between the players and fans in emotions and in moments. That's why I love this job. To see these things, to feel these things, it is about that. So I am really fulfilled for the moment in that way. But I want to give the people more and to get one moment to get a really big explosion together. I think it can be amazing." Report by Graham McGarry. Evening Times Sport, March 19. Nick Roger says, "Scotty Scheffler's accomplishments are deserving of wider acclaim." Golfers, as we all know, can be a peculiar breed. My dearly departed colleague Jock McVicar, for instance, used to possess a quite staggering number of putters. In fact, lifting his car boot was akin to gently prizing open an ancient casket and gasping in slack-jawed bewilderment at the vast hoard of treasured antiquities that dwelled within. I say treasured, but in reality, this tangled pile of putting paraphernalia, which had been banished to the dark nooks of his Honda Civic amid much cursing condemnation, merely served as a sombre shrine to Jock's muttering futility on the greens. At the conclusion of one particularly wretched golf writer's outing, he shoved the putter into the back of the car with the same kind of silent, callous disregard that would be adopted by a hitman when he has to hastily bundle a tarpaulin-wrapped corpse into the boot. To be fair, most of us were doing exactly the same thing with our own infernal clubs. What was it old Tony Lima once uttered about the fickle flat stick? "Here is an instrument of torture, designed by Tantalus and forged in the devil's own smithy," Jock would no doubt have agreed with Champagne Tony's withering observation. As for the world number one, Scotty Scheffler, well, his putting woes may not have been quite as bad as old Jock's, but it had been causing growing consternation, particularly when that pesky lot in the golf media would not stop banging on about them. Imperious from tee to green, Scheffler's fortunes on the actual greens had led to him slipping so far down into the depths of the PGA Tour's putting rankings His actual putter was just about being explored by a maritime salvage crew. The strange thing, of course, was that Scheffler was playing so well, it made those putting statistics look even worse. At the Memorial last season, for instance, Scheffler gained 20.69 strokes against the field, tee to green, but lost 8.5 shots to the field in putting, and he still just missed out on a playoff by a shot. Even when his putter was colder than a Morningside welcome, the rest could not catch Scheffler at the top of the world order. Perhaps they have now missed their chance. Over the last few months, the unassuming Scheffler has been grafting away with the English putting guru Phil Kenyon while switching to a mallet putter. Presumably he had a rummage around in his car boot for one, and the endeavours are bearing considerable fruit. The 27-year-old's five-shot romp at the Arnold Palmer Invitational the other week was followed by a thrilling victory in the Players' Championship at Sawgrass on Sunday night. The last man to do that Florida double whammy was a certain Tiger Woods back in 2001. 5 strokes adrift at the start of the final round, Scheffler mounted a barnstorming charge over the stadium course that could have been accompanied by the sound of thundering hoofs, as he became the first man in the 50-year history of the Players' Championship to win it back-to-back. In 2 weeks, he has successfully defended 2 huge titles, a feat which requires a mighty dollop of physical and mental fortitude. That he won at Sawgrass while nursing a niggling neck complaint underlined his resolve and ferocious competitive spirit. The prize was thoroughly deserved. The plaudits were richly merited too. Scheffler was the ultimate winner, but the game of golf was a winner too. Sunday's showpiece made us forget above all the wearying talk of infighting, framework agreements, equity plans, LIV Golf, and the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund. Well, until all that wearying talk rears its head again. Listen, it started up already. The escape was nice while it lasted, wasn't it? Scheffler remains the undisputed number one, even if the world rankings are compromised somewhat by the ongoing Liv farrago. His consistency is phenomenal. What Rory McIlroy would give for such consistency. And inevitably, Scheffler's latest conquest has heightened the giddy cries that he can go on and establish a tiger-like tyranny on the global game. That, of course, would require Scheffler to embark on a ridiculous period of sustained excellence, and he knows it. We were playing at RIV at the Genesis Invitational this year, and I hit my tee ball, and this guy yells out, "Congrats on being number one, Scotty, 11 more years to go," reflected Scheffler as he mulled over Wood's astonishing longevity during his pomp as golf's dominant force. While all and sundry worked themselves into a fankle about the prospect of Scheffler doing this, that and the other in the weeks, months and years to come, the man himself retains that wonderful sense of composure. Never too up, never too down, just calm, level-headed, middle ground. He is largely unaffected by the fame and fortune, and all the talk of greatness tends to be greeted with a nonchalant shrug. Given all the noise and nonsense that has consumed men's golf, there's a sense that Scheffler's accomplishments over the last couple of years have not been given the recognition they truly deserve. Undervalued? Perhaps. But unrivaled? There's no doubt. In a turbulent, fractured time, when egos, greed and entitlement have grabbed much of the attention, the wholesome, down-to-earth Scheffler He's just the right man to be on top of the golfing world, says Nick Roger. Evening Times Sport, March 19. Cuthbert still dreaming of first Champions League trophy with Chelsea. Report by Martin McMillan. Chelsea forward Erin Cuthbert still finds herself dreaming of her first Champions League trophy, despite boss Emma Hayes' firm reality-rooted approach to the competition. The Blues, who face Ajax at Amsterdam's Johan Cruyff Arena in the first of their two-leg last-eight encounter, remain on course to become just the second English side to complete a quadruple, with Arsenal women having done so in 2007, when Hayes was a member of the Gunners' coaching staff. The European club title is the one accolade that has so far eluded Hayes, who, after winning 15 trophies in charge of Celtic, will depart at the end of the season to take up her new role as head coach of the United States women's national team. Cuthbert said, "It would mean everything to get to the final and to go on and win it. But, you know, I've been at this club so long, it's all about a process. I think we are in the quarterfinals now, and it's two ties that lie ahead. Two tough games against a really tough team who have more than proved themselves at this level. So I think we're under no illusion. It's going to be a tough game, but of course it's hard not to dream a little bit. You are a football player, but at the same time I've been so well drilled under Emma that it is very process oriented." Chelsea have reached a Champions League semi-final four times in their history, coming closest to the title in 2021. When Cuthbert came on as a second-half substitute in the Blues' 4-0 loss to Barcelona in the final. They currently lead the Women's Super League, level on 40 points, but with a goal difference advantage over Manchester City, and will play Arsenal in the Conte Cup final later this month, before taking on Manchester United in April for a chance to defend their FA Cup title at Wembley the following month. Ajax are just the second Dutch side to have reached the last eight after Seastoom in 2006-07 and had sold 34,200 tickets for Chelsea's visit by Monday, putting the contest on course to be the best attended women's game in Dutch history. Hayes aside know a thing or two about big crowds, having seen a Chelsea women record 32,970 visitors at Stamford Bridge on Friday for their 3-1 WSL victory over Arsenal. Cuthbert added, "It's their first time at this point in the competition. We can certainly use our experience as an advantage. But I certainly know that if I was in the competition for the first time, I'd be playing without fear. We need to be wary of that as well. They've got nothing to lose, and we've got everything to lose. So we'll be giving it everything." Despite the lack of a Champions League trophy in her cabinet, Hayes brushed off the suggestion this competition might matter more, saying, "Every game means a lot to me. You can see that just in the league and having a record crowd at Stamford Bridge. I really do not portion any more emotional response to one competition over the other. I would like to be part of a team that wins as much as possible. So I am excited to be in this arena. I saw the quality out there. I'm looking forward to the atmosphere." Report by Martin McMillan. Evening Times Sport, March 20. Celtic flop admits he could not wait to seal transfer exit. Report by Mark Walker. Celtic flop Alexandro Bernabe admitted He could not wait to leave the Hoops because he was desperate for a return to South America. The left-back has joined Brazilian side Internacional on loan after a disappointing stint at Brendan Rodgers' side, where he failed to make any real impression. Argentinian defender Bernabe's debut for his new club was delayed after he missed his connecting flight to Brazil last week. But the 23-year-old should make his bow next week in the Gaucho Cup tie against Juventude, after he was cleared to play by the Brazilian FA, and he revealed he jumped at the chance of a return to his continent. He said, "I really wanted to come back and feel what South American football is all about again. Wearing this Internacional shirt gives me a lot of emotion and adrenaline. Knowing what this club means makes me want to get going and make an impression here. When I heard about Internacional wanting me, I wanted to come here. When it comes to my football assets, I am fast, I cross the ball well, and show a lot of motivation and aggression. But you will see that where it matters, on the pitch, I am going to give everything to the cause this season." Report by Mark Walker. Evening Times Sport. March 20. Celtic USA tour schedule complete. Report by Robin Hanratty. English Premier League pair Manchester City and Chelsea, plus MLS side DC United, have been announced as Celtic's opponents for their blockbuster USA summer tour. Brendan Rodgers' squad were already scheduled to meet Chelsea at the iconic Notre Dame Stadium in South Bend, Indiana on July 27, and now they will go head-to-head with last season's treble winners 4 days earlier at Kennan Stadium in Chapel Hill, South Carolina, after beginning the stateside tour with a trip to United States capital Washington, where they will face DC United at Audi Field. Celtic club captain and Scotland international Callum McGregor said, "We are delighted to be visiting Washington to meet DC United, and we are sure the match will be another great sporting occasion." Celtic has enjoyed a number of great visits to the United States previously to play both European and MLS teams, and I am sure this summer we will enjoy another successful visit. "We are really grateful to have such a strong fan base in the States, and it is great that these matches will give our fans a chance to see us in action again." Reacting to Celtic jetting out to his homeland, Cameron Carter-Vickers also detailed his excitement ahead of the tour and paid tribute to their large global fan base. He told the club website, "Everyone at Celtic is really looking forward to a summer visit to the United States. And of course, myself, as a US national player, I can't wait. We have some great matches lined up at brilliant venues. And of course, our match with Manchester City will be bringing together two of the biggest names in the game. We are fortunate at Celtic to have such a global reach, and we hope as many supporters as possible can attend the match in North Carolina. And of course, we will be doing our very best to put on a great show for the fans." Report by Robin Hanratty. Evening Times Sport, March 20. Poachers could have gone under after Rangers spats. Report by Graeme McGarry. When news broke a couple of years back that Rangers may have been lining up a move for Ryan Poachers, the then Hibs defender was just as shocked as anyone else with even a passing knowledge of Scottish football at the time. Poachers and the Ibrox club have history, as they say. Ancient history, he would now contend. Poachers will be 25 next week, and a move to Watford has matured him as a player and a person, after he left behind the often heavy baggage he had accumulated while turning out for his boyhood heroes at Easter Road. He admits that perhaps at times he made mistakes in his early career, but the ensuing attention and abuse he received was, he feels, not only undeserved, but the making of him, as unwelcome and unpleasant as it was to experience at the time. An ongoing public war of words between Porteous and then Rangers manager Stephen Gerrard could have, he now realises, taken him under. Gerrard twice criticised Porteous for tackles on his players, with the defender being ordered off for challenges on Borna Barisic and then Joe Aribo, a tackle that Gerrard called a leg breaker. The fallout was severe, with then Hibs manager Jack Ross saying that his player had received all manner of unsavoury messages on social media in the aftermath of the incidents and Gerrard's subsequent comments. Ross said, "I have seen that sectarian abuse, homophobic abuse, people telling him they hope he dies of a tumour." Porteous would have the last laugh, infamously poking fun at Gerrard's insistence he was staying at Rangers before leaving for Aston Villa, aping his "do I look happy" response in an interview of his own after Hibs had beaten the Ibrox side 3-1 in the League Cup semi-final. He admits, though, that the attention he received was not so funny at the time, and that he has his family and friends to thank for not only getting him through that period, but for helping him become the player and person he is today, and a fixture in the Scotland national team. Said Porteous, "I think if I didn't have as many people around me that helped you out, a lot of people could go under with the stuff I kind of dealt with. But I had good managers, good teammates, and a good group of mates and family that always said, don't listen to it and read it, and I taught myself not to." When you're young and coming through, you always pick up your phone and go on Twitter or whatever, and you look at it. There are a lot of young lads that might go through similar that could go under, but I always had a good group of people behind me, and obviously within football, who said, don't listen to it. You learn from mistakes. You take the positives as well. I think that kind of stuff makes you stronger. You learn from the naivety you have at a young age. It stood me in good stead. Listen, hopefully I've got better, a better player, a better person, on and off the park as well. You learn from these things, but I don't think it was as big a problem as it was made out to be. Hopefully the one thing that's changed over the last 3 or 4 years is I've become a better player. If you were to try to name a defender who differs completely in his approach to the game to the Porteous of Hibs, then Virgil van Dijk would probably be the prime example, with the Dutchman mastering a laid-back approach to defending that has carried him to the very top of the game. Porteous would certainly not compare himself with the Liverpool captain in any way, shape or form, but he will be sharing a pitch with him on Friday evening as Scotland take on the Netherlands in Amsterdam, the first of their friendly outings as they tune up for the European Championships this summer. Van Dijk, he says, is the sort of player he has been looking to learn from as he has refined his style and complemented his raw aggression with a more measured approach. And he said, "I've not been hot-headed for a while. There have been flare-ups at times, but no, he's a brilliant player. You try and watch the Premier League games and big games as much as you can, and he is one of the best defenders in the world. It will be good to step onto the same pitch as him, but the next step is not just being there, but making an impact and showing what you can do. He is obviously right up there as one of the best players in the world, never mind just centre-backs. He's been doing it on the big stage for a long time. I don't know if I am going to compare me to him, but hopefully we will go and as a team try to work hard against and break down a very good Holland team. These are the games that we want to try and take the next step, because these are the games we will be playing at the Euros against top teams. The next step for us is competing with them and beating them. Report by Graham McGarry. Evening Times Sport, March 20. Rangers issue only opportunity warning to fans over pre-season plans. Report by David Irvin. Rangers chiefs have warned supporters their pre-season friendly against Manchester United may be the only opportunity to see the club in Scotland over the summer. The Ibrox club confirmed plans for a bounce game against the Premier League giants at Murrayfield on Saturday, July 20. The fixture will see Philippe Clement's side take on Erik ten Hag's Charges in a glamour friendly at the home of Scottish Rugby in the capital. However, the Rangers' release on the fixture came with a warning that it might be the only match Rangers play in Scotland in pre-season. A statement on the club website warned supporters that due to the planned works on the Copeland Stand at Ibrox, there may not be a fixture at their home stadium this summer. The relevant section of the statement read, "The game promises to be an exciting preparation test for the 24-25 campaign for Philippe Clement's side. And due to the planned Copeland Stand works at Ibrox this summer, the fixture may be the only opportunity to watch Rangers live in Scotland this pre-season." Rangers CCO Karim Virani said on the friendly fixture, "We are delighted to have been invited to play in this terrific fixture in July against a high level of opposition in Manchester United. Our supporters have fond memories of our one previous trip to Murrayfield, and I am sure we'll enjoy a fantastic day out in the capital in the summer at what is an excellent venue. For the club, while most importantly, it will give us an excellent preparation game for Philippe's men's first team squad, it will also give us terrific exposure with the game set to be shown all over the world. We are very much looking forward to this game and will confirm the remainder of our pre-season plans for this summer in due course." Evening Times Sport, March 21. Diamong set to pick Ivory Coast over Ghana. Report by Mark Walker. Rangers star Mohamed Diamong looks set to choose Ivory Coast over Ghana in the battle for his international future. The 22-year-old was called up this week for both the Ivory Coast under-23s team and the Ghana full squad for friendly matches. He has no family ties to Ghana, although he holds a Ghanaian passport because he was brought up in the country and attended their Right to Dream Academy. Ghana were expecting him to turn up to their Marrakesh base for their training camp ahead of friendlies against Nigeria and Uganda after paying for flights for him, but he has yet to show. And top football officials at the Ivorian FA reportedly urgently contacted Diamond and asked him to change his mind. Now he's hinted he looks set to stick with the Ivory Coast, whom he earned one under-23's cap against Morocco a year ago. In a social media post he stated, "As a child who was passionate about football, my dream was to become a professional footballer and thus defend the colours of my country wherever I went and to play with the national team. Today I am truly grateful to Allah for having achieved part of this dream. that of becoming a professional footballer. There remains the other part, that of joining the national team, and also of making my parents proud. Furthermore, I am also aware of the interest shown in me by my host country, Ghana, where I spent more than 7 years of my life and my training as a footballer. However, a lot of things have been said, but I am in direct contact with the manager affected by my decision, and he is the one who has the real information regarding my choice. I would like to thank my club Rangers for their support, my family, and also all my fans during this period. Report by Mark Walker. Evening Times Sport. March 21. Hatate close to Celtic injury return. Report by Ewan Payton. Rio Hatate has stepped up his recovery from injury by playing some part in a bounce game for Celtic. The Japanese midfielder took part in 45 minutes of the Hoops game against St Mirren, which was played behind closed doors on Wednesday afternoon. The 26-year-old has been out of action since the beginning of January, when he made a cameo appearance against the same team in Paisley. He also picked up a knock on international duty with Japan at the Asian Cup. With his return to action at Leinertstown, though, it means he could be in contention to play at Livingston a week on Sunday, before the huge derby at Ibrox a week later on April 7. Brendan Rodgers is hopeful of having Hatate, Callum McGregor and Cameron Carter-Vickers all back and fit to play against Rangers, with the title race set to go down to the wire. Evening Times Sport. March 21. Matt O'Reilly opens up on Celtic to Atletico Madrid transfer. Report by Ewan Payton. Matt O'Reilly has lifted the lid on Atletico Madrid's bid to sign him from Celtic in January. The La Liga giants had an initial loan offer with an obligation to buy the 23-year-old for £18 million this summer, rejected by the Parkhead club during the most recent transfer window. The Danish international insists he's not upset that Celtic knocked back the approach for his services, but did admit that it was cool. He refused to rule out a move away from Glasgow this summer, with the Hoops believed to be seeking £25 million. O'Reilly was signed for just £1.5 million from MK Dons during Ange Postecoglou's second transfer window, so if he were to move on this summer, the Scottish champions would be in line for a healthy profit. Speaking to Danish media outlet Tipsbladet, O'Reilly spoke of Atletico's interest for the first time and said, "Celtic received an offer from Atletico Madrid, and that was cool. I was not really close to leaving because Celtic wanted more money. I'm not upset about it. For me, it was just cool that a club like them would want me. It's not often you receive an offer from Atletico Madrid, so of course it's great." On the prospect of the Spanish side reviving their interest, O'Reilly left the door open for a summer move and said, "We have to see what happens." The attacking midfielder made his international debut against Northern Ireland in November last year. He was not initially selected for the upcoming Denmark camp, but was eventually called up for this weekend's doubleheader against Switzerland and the Faroe Islands. Report by Ewan Payton. Evening Times Sport. March 21. Rangers sponsors in classy touch for fan after Dundee debacle. Report by Ewan Payton. Two Rangers fans who set off on a mammoth overnight journey from Wales to Dundee at the weekend will eventually see the two teams play with an all-expenses-paid trip. A man and his son embarked on the long trip in the early hours of Sunday morning in order to arrive in the City of Discovery on time for the scheduled lunchtime kickoff between the Premiership sides. Of course, the game was called off at Dens Park, as the game fell victim to the pitch not being able to withstand some hefty rainfall for the fourth time this season. After a pitch inspection carried out at 10:15 a.m. by referee Don Robertson, the match was postponed as travelling fans, media and other attendees were sent home unhappy after arriving in Dundee. None more so than the pair who made the journey from Wales, as fans sympathised with their story on social media. The fan's young boy did get some consolation though, as he met the likes of Rabbi Matondo and Fabio Silva outside the ground for photos. Now, with the SPFL yesterday confirming, the match will take place on Wednesday, April 10, in front of the Sky Sports cameras. The same fan has taken to social media to share a classy touch from two of Rangers' sponsors ahead of the game. He wrote on X, "Massive thanks to Rangers Football Club partners, Reno Express and Pipeline Energy Solutions, who got in touch and have kindly covered our travel and hotel costs after Sunday's disaster." Evening Times Sport, March 21. Rangers urged to tie down on-form Lundstrom. Report by Matthew Lindsay. Former Rangers captain Lee McCulloch believes that John Lundstrom has flourished at the Ibrox club in the past 3 years because he embraces the demands of their supporters fully. And the former Scotland international has expressed hope the Glasgow Giants can persuade the English midfielder to sign a new contract so they can build on the progress they have made under Philippe Clement. Lundstrom has been one of Clement's most consistent performers at home and abroad in the 23-24 campaign, but his current deal runs out in the summer and he has not reached agreement on an extension. Speaking at Murrayfield yesterday, as he promoted the friendly between Rangers and Manchester United there in July, McCulloch admitted he would like the former Sheffield United player to remain in Govan. He said, "For me, Jack Butland in goal has been tremendous, but I think John's been arguably Rangers' best outfield player. He's had a lot of stick, which you're going to get if you play for Rangers. End of. But the way he's been in the middle of the pitch, showing aggression, running, nicking important goals, passing range, being good in the air, has been fantastic. He's got everything. I am not sure he would be happy to be compared to me, but he can also play in a couple of different positions. He even played centre-half a few times last season. He gets what the club is all about, which is the biggest thing for me. He loves playing for Rangers. I've spoken to him a few times, and he's a real good, grounded boy. It makes a massive difference. John's got that mentality where he loves to win, hates to get beaten, and performs consistently week in, week out. He's been an easy target at times when he's actually been playing okay. But when he's on his game, he's one of the best. Personally, I'd love to see him stay, but I don't know if that will happen. His contract is up at the end of the season, but I think he's been good enough to say you should try to keep a hold of him. That's only my opinion though. That's down to the powers that be. But he gets the demands of the fans, so for me it would be good to keep hold of him." Report by Matthew Lindsay. Evening Times Sport, March 21. Scott McKenna pulls out of Scotland squad. Report by Ewan Payton. Scott McKenna has withdrawn from the Scotland squad. The defender has dropped out of Steve Clark's pool of players ahead of the upcoming doubleheader against the Netherlands and Northern Ireland. The 27-year-old is currently on loan at FC Copenhagen in Denmark after falling out of favour at Premier League side Nottingham Forest. Clark last week conveyed his delight at the former Aberdeen centre-back getting a move to secure regular game time ahead of this summer's European Championships in Germany. But the head coach will need to make do without McKenna for the next two friendly games, as he became the second defender along with Grant Hanley to pull out of the first 2024 camp. Clark, when asked about McKenna's January switch, said that last week, "I remember in the autumn games I was playing Scott and he was not getting a game at Forest. I was actually playing him to try and keep him involved, keep him moving. It was nice that he got the move. I went to see him last week. I went to the Etihad to watch Scott play against Manchester City. I thought he did well, plays in a good team. Copenhagen are starting to move up the Danish league as you get towards the business end of the season. A good move for Scott, and I am pleased that he is playing week in, week out." Report by Ewan Payton. Evening Times Sport, March 22. Billy Gilmer looking to emulate idols. Report by Matthew Lindsay. Watching the World Cup finals in South Africa in 2010 proved to be an experience which would have a profound impact on Billy Gilmer. He marvelled at the stylish football which eventual winners Spain produced, not least their revered midfielder Xabi Alonso, Sergio Busquets, Xavi Hernandez and Andres Iniesta in that memorable tournament. The diminutive youngster who was showing considerable potential as a player himself by that stage modelled himself on the Barcelona duo Xavi and Iniesta, who were both of a similar stature thereafter and did not look back. The Brighton man, who is set to start for Scotland in their international friendly against the Netherlands in the Johan Cruyff Arena in Amsterdam this evening, is eagerly anticipating gracing the same stage as his idols once again at Euro 2024 in Germany in June. And he is, having played more first-team football this season than at any stage in his career to date, hoping that he can make the same sort of impression as his role models and possibly inspire some promising kids somewhere himself. He said, "I think if you ask any Scottish player or fan, they will tell you how much they're looking forward to that opening game in Munich, in Germany, versus Germany. It's the stuff of dreams. It's night and day from the last Euros when the crowds were reduced and it felt a bit unreal. This will be more like the tournaments you grew up watching as a kid. My first one was South Africa in 2010. I had the theme tune as a ringtone on my phone. I remember watching the final on holiday with the family and wanting Spain to win. Growing up, I love watching Barcelona with that midfield of Iniesta, Xavi and Busquets, and I base myself on their way of playing, a small guy who knows how to keep the ball. I just give it 100%, and right now I'm in a good place. I'm feeling good and looking forward to these two games. I am enjoying my football, which is a totally different story from last season. From not playing at all to being in the team regularly, my confidence is high, and I want to bring that to the Scotland stage. Getting games and experience under my belt has been great for my development. We have played in Europe this season as well, and I get it with Scotland against other national teams. I want as much experience as I can, and the boys around me have helped. Hopefully I've shown that I can go and do it on this stage now," I come into most camps ready to go. I'm young, hungry, and I want to play in every game. It's my country. I've played a lot of games now, and this season I feel strong with no injuries. I want to keep this going. I go into every game now, for Brighton or Scotland, thinking I can dominate the game, no matter the opposition. That's my mindset for any game. I don't go into it with any nerves or thinking I'm up against this player or that player. Gilmour had just broken into the Scotland squad when the national team played in the Euro 2020 back in 2021, and he only made his competitive debut in the group game against England at Wembley. He was superb for his country in the goalless draw, but he believes he is far more complete player now, and is optimistic he can make an even greater impression at Euro 2024 if he is given the nod again by manager Steve Clarke. And he continued, "Before the last Euros, I was brought in late on for a friendly against Holland away. At that stage, I was thinking about just experiencing it and being around the squad. I didn't actually think about playing or certainly starting against England at Wembley, which was unbelievable. This time, I'm more part of the group and I want to play games. There's loads of competition in the squad and everyone is playing well for their clubs. The manager will have to make hard decisions. I need to give it my all and hopefully I'll be in the squad." The 5'7" 22-year-old has benefited greatly from working under a vastly experienced coach like Clarke during the past 3 years, but he also knows he owes Brighton manager Roberto De Zerbi a debt of gratitude. And he said, "With every player, you do your best when you have a manager who believes in you and trusts you. Clarke trusts me to showcase what I've got. With Scotland, there's no doubt Steve always has my back. He's helped me a lot since coming through. And my gaffer at Brighton, De Zerbi, has certainly given me that this season. He's shown confidence in me to go and play. He's intense. He's a very passionate man who only thinks about football 24/7. He has great skill in teaching us how to play, and his work ethic on and off the pitch is incredible. Football is constantly on his mind. Gilmour has formed an outstanding central midfield partnership with Callum McGregor in the Scotland side in the past, but the Celtic captain will not be involved in the double header against Netherlands and Northern Ireland because he is sidelined with an Achilles injury at the moment. The Ayrshire man is keen to ensure that he dovetails with whoever else plays in the middle of the park in Amsterdam this evening and help the visitors to record a positive result against a leading football nation ahead of Euro 2024. And he said, "Myself and Callum play really well together and we complement each other's game. We're small technical players at the base of the midfield. He's going to be a massive miss for us. He's a top player, and I'm sure he'll be raging that he's not here, because he always turns up for club and country. He'll be a big miss, but whoever comes into the midfield, we need to create partnerships." Report by Matthew Lindsay. Evening Times Sport, March 22. SPFL Trust Trophy and Al Hilal World Record. Report by David Irvin. Craig Harrison chuckles at the mention of TNS, that's the New Saints. The SPFL Trust Trophy, a world record recovery bid, Airdrie and Al Hilal within the same sentence. Truly, the implications of the SPFL Trust Trophy final for the Welsh club TNS, the New Saints, extend far beyond another piece of silverware for the already packed cabinet and a few drinks on the road back to Oswestry. Rather, Harrison, the most successful manager in the club's history, is hunting down a historic quadruple this season, a first-ever SPFL Trust Trophy win from a club outside of Scotland, and regaining the world record for consecutive wins snatched by Al Hilal this year. A TNS win on Sunday. There could be a lot riding on it, said Harrison, ahead of the showpiece final against Airdrie at the Falkirk Stadium. We could equal our record of our own personal consecutive wins. We could get closer to Al Hilal, and we could have a third out of a possible four trophies. It's a big game, and it's got a couple of layers added to it as well as being a big game in itself. Former Premier League defender Harrison has led his side to the longest ever consecutive winning run in 2017, with 27 wins on the trot, to leapfrog Ajax's previous record. Al Hilal are currently on a 29-match winning run. TNS could equal their own record figure on Sunday, and in turn bag a third trophy this campaign, having already lifted the J.D. Kimru Premier title and the Nathaniel M.G. Cup. The New Saints are also in the semi-final of the Welsh Cup in what could be a trophy-laden season. And Harrison is determined to taste victory in the SPFL Trust Trophy, regardless of other ambitions, having previously reached the semi-final at TNS and lost in the final to Ross County as Connor's key assistant. Said Harrison, "It certainly would be a nice one. It's always nice when you're the first one to do it. We have been very fortunate to win titles, win Welsh Cups, win League Cups, compete in Europe, hold a world record for a length of time, but not this one. I got to the semi-final when I was here previously and got beaten by St Mirren, and then I was assistant manager with Andy Morrison at Connors Quay when Ross County beat us in the final in Inverness. To define the ultimate success would be to win it. Being close on numerous occasions, it does make everybody want to go that one step further. From my point of view, and more importantly the club and Welsh football, it would be a fantastic one to record." The New Saints have already dumped four Scottish sides out of the competition en route to the final, with Falkirk, Arbroath, East Fife and Hibs B unable to match the Welsh champions. And Harrison reckons having experience and knowledge of Scottish football littered throughout the team has been vital. "It's invaluable," said Harrison of his squad members turned scouts. "We've got Declan McManus, John Routledge, Danny Redmond and Jordan Marshall. All four have played at a really good standard, the highest standard in Scottish football, and then a couple of clubs in the Championship as well. They know and understand the level, and if we can lean on their expertise and pick their brains with little bits here and there, it always helps. Myself and Chris Sargent have managed to get to games to see Airdrie live on three occasions. Then we've got Y Scout and other platforms that we can see games. We've done as much due diligence in our homework as we possibly could have done." One player in particular whom Harrison needed no information on was Charlie Telfer, who in a bizarre twist of fate will face TNS in the final after training with the club before his move to Airdrie. Explained Harrison, "He came down to train with us for a few days. He got recommended and we spoke to his agent. I think he was a free agent, so I think he went on after that to sign for Airdrie. We know how good Charlie is. We've seen him firsthand, so we know he's a really good player. Lot of experience, technically good player, loads of energy and loads of quality. We know a lot about them." Report by David Irvin. Evening Times Sport. March 22. Scotland under 21 boss thrilled. Report by Mark Walker. Scotland 4, Kazakhstan 1. Scott Gemmell was thrilled as Scotland under-21s blew Kazakhstan away in Paisley last night to take a step closer to Euro 2025. The young Scots produced an exciting and powerful first-half display, which could and should have yielded more goals than the three from captain Josh Doig, Dundee's Lyle Cameron, and a penalty from Tommy Conway. Luis Fiorini added a fourth after the break, before the visitors grabbed a consolation. It put Scotland joint top with Spain, having played a game more, with the nine group winners and the three best runners-up qualifying for the finals next year in Slovakia automatically, and three more from a playoff. Scotland have not reached a final since 1996, and Gemmell was delighted at the strength of his team's performance, which he reckoned was on a par of previous wins on his watch against the likes of Brazil, France, Netherlands and Croatia. He said, "I think you could see we had a few players back whom we didn't have at the end of last year. You could also see the level, and we had a lot of chances to score, so really pleasing. I think it's really good we can look forward to the rest of the games with confidence. You have to beat teams like this, and it's not easy, but they've shown they can do it. It's about mentality as well as talent, and it was all on show. In terms of qualification, it is brilliant we are in the position we are. I don't look at the table, but I'm aware of the results we have had. But it's very difficult. And we have to keep going game by game, because to qualify for the 21s finals, you almost have to be perfect. You have to get over 20 points, probably more than that. It is very difficult, and that's why I constantly try to add context in terms of developing young players. That's what this age group is about. But I understand people want to see the team do well. We all do." Scotland took a stunning lead in the 20th minute after a brilliant strike from Sassuolo wideman Doig. Kieran Bowie showed enough strength to bolt free on the right wing and cut the ball back to the onrushing Conor Barron. The Aberdeen midfielder failed to catch his shot right, and the ball spun wide to Doig for the ex-Hibs man to crack a brilliant left-foot shot into the top corner. 4 minutes later saw Scotland double their advantage, and again Northampton Town striker Bowie was heavily involved. He was simply too strong for the visiting defence as he cut inside and teed up Cameron to power a low shot into the corner. Bristol City striker Tommy Conway twice went close as Scotland threatened to run riot in the first half. The third did arrive in the 38th minute from the penalty spot when keeper Temerlin Amabaikal cleaned out Conway from Rangers defender Leon King's long ball, and the striker duly dispatched the spot kick himself. Scotland continued where they had left off and netted their fourth 10 minutes into the second half when Conway unselfishly fed strike partner Fiorini, who easily netted. Kazakhstan netted a consolation from the spot when Ibin Bulut was adjudged to have fouled Ankudinov, and Jan Trubanov beat Ipswich townkeeper Kieran Slicker. Report by Mark Walker. Evening Times Sport. March 22. Steve Clark on his debt to a Dutch master. Report by Matthew Lindsay. Steve Clark's early experiences of the Dutch game could easily have put him off the world-famous football nation for life. Clark was a member of the St Mirren's side, which faced a Feyenoord team that comprised a young Ruud Gullit and an ageing Johan Cruyff in the first round of the UEFA Cup in 1983. He was unable to prevent the Paisley club from slumping to a 3-0 aggregate defeat to the Rotherham Giants. The fullback also won the last of his 6 Scotland caps against the Netherlands in Utrecht in 1994 and was on the receiving end of a 3-1 loss that could easily have been a lot worse. "We got humped," said the Scotland manager with a smile, as he looked ahead to the friendly match against the former European Championship winners and World Cup finalists here in Amsterdam this evening. "It was 3-1, but we got humped," he said. "They were going to the World Cup, and we were sort of cannon fodder for the send-off. It was my last game for Scotland, and Ruud's last one for the Dutch, as he had a little disagreement with the manager, Dick Advocaat. I played against Ruud with St Mirren in both games against Feyenoord. He played right wing in the first game and was outstanding. Then we went to Feyenoord and he played sweeper, and he was even better. I was also lucky enough to be on the same pitch as Cruyff at Love Street. That was a big thing at the time. He was one of the iconic figures of Dutch and world football. So it was nice to say you have shared the same pitch as Johan Cruyff. Big names, big history, and they've still got good players now. But they have always had good teams and always produced good players. I think the team in 1978 that lost the final to Argentina would be one you would look at and say, that was a really good team. Scotland did beat them 3-2 in the group stages, but people from that era stick in the mind. Clark's admiration for the land of total football is, despite these painful reverses he was involved in, undiminished. Perhaps the fact that Dutch master Gullit, the AC Milan great whom he played alongside when he was at Chelsea, helped to launch his coaching career, has something to do with that. Said Clark, "First of all, Ruud was a teammate, and then he became clear manager after Glenn Hoddle took the England job. So he was a teammate as well as the gaffer. So that was interesting. We won the FA Cup with Ruud as manager, which was nice. But he took me to Newcastle with him. I must have made some kind of impression on him. When he got the job at Newcastle, he phoned me up and asked me to come. He must have got a decent feel for me. That was the start of my coaching. I was player coach at Chelsea, and one of the stipulations of the move was I could go to Newcastle as a coach, but not a player. That was fine. I just turned 35 and had some injury issues, and was thinking it was probably nice time for a different career. Ruud gave me the first step, and I am grateful for it. He had a good way of playing. I thought his coaching methods were good. He had a good manner about him in training, and his sessions were good. It was quite a Dutch style, you could say. He wanted to dominate the ball. It was only a short spell we had together, as he didn't last long in the top job at Newcastle. But for me, it was the start of a journey. We were pretty similar. I was going to say similar careers, but that's not quite right. We played pretty similar games and were teammates before. I could see how good he was, and then I could see how he adapted when going from player to a coach. It was interesting to see. They always seem to have good teams and have produced good players. You look at the side that lost to Argentina in 78 as a really good team, even though Scotland did beat them 3-2 in the group stages. Clark has lost touch with Gullit in recent years, but he is keeping his fingers crossed that his old teammate and coaching colleague makes an appearance in the Johan Cruyff Arena this evening, when his Scotland side take on the Netherlands. And he said, "I haven't spoken to Hurd for a little while now. It's just circumstances. Hopefully he comes to the game and I bump into him. It would be nice to see him." Report by Matthew Lindsay. Evening Times Sport. March 22. Taylor defends teammate Maeda. Report by Robbie Hanratty. Greg Taylor has come to the defence of teammate Dazen Maeda after the Celtic forward received harsh criticism while on international duty with Japan. Maeda has 17 caps for his country and was Celtic's only representative in the Japan squad for their recent World Cup qualifying win over North Korea, with Kyogo continuing to be exiled by the manager and Rio Hatate working his way back to fitness. The spotlight has been shone on Maeda since former Samurai Blue defender Marcus Tanaka labelled the Celtic star nothing special and claimed he is terrible on the ball. But Hoops left-back Taylor believes that assessment is not merited, as he stated why he's Maeda's biggest fan. Asked if he felt the winger was underappreciated, he replied, "Not within this building, and certainly not by me. I'm Dazen's biggest fan, and I'll never underappreciate him as a player. He's a breath of fresh air. He works ever so hard for the team, and is always willing to do that bit more. His pressing, I think he's generally one of the best at pressing in the world. I think his presses and his numbers are right up there. In training, I actually think he recharges the battery through the week at times. There's a couple of days out there where you think Dazen's just getting ready for the weekend. And sure enough, when the weekend comes, he normally doesn't stop. That's a good way to be. He knows his body." Meanwhile, Mikey Johnson has pinpointed a lack of continuity and trust as reasons why things have not worked out how he would have liked at Celtic so far. The 24-year-old Johnson was tipped for big things coming through the Hoops ranks, but after struggling to feature regularly in Brendan Rodgers' plans during the first half of the season, the winger was shipped out on loan to West Brom in the January transfer window. Since joining the English Championship side, Johnson has flourished. He has netted 6 goals from 10 appearances and provided a further assist to help the Baggies jump into 5th place in the league table. The Celtic youth graduate understands the ruthlessness of modern day football and that he needs to continue his current form to remain a first pick, and he believes being given regular games in his natural position has been a huge help in bringing out his best form, something he failed to do frequently enough in Glasgow. He said, "It's the same situation there, but in a different place, and luckily in a different way for me. It feels more like it's my position to lose here, and I just need to keep performing every week, but it's always good to have competition for places. We've got guys with quality coming back, experienced lads like Matty Phillips, and we'll need to lean on lads like that towards the end of the season. It just feels I needed a run of games to play in my position and have some trust from my teammates and the manager. I've had that while I've been here, and it's what's helped me kick on. Earlier in my career, I had a lot of injuries, was in and out, and was always trying to establish myself. I would maybe start 1 week, then not the next, and it's always hard when you're consistently not playing. That's what I've needed, and that's what I've been getting at Albion." When discussing how his contribution has helped West Brom's chances of reaching the much-coveted playoffs, Johnson added, "When you're in the flow, your joint confidence just comes out in your play, and that's where I want to continue being. I've always had the trust in my ability, but a lot of the time my body was breaking down. I wasn't ready, strong, but But I feel I've got into a great rhythm now where I trust everything. Trust myself, my body, ability, fitness, tactical knowledge. So everything's falling into place, and it's the right time to have come to a place like Albion. Report by Robbie Hanratty. Evening Times Sport, March 25. Colin Montgomery, still keen to make a splash in swinging 60s. Report by Nick Roger. For years, the Mission Hills Resort in the Californian desert witnessed various champions on the LPGA Tour hurling themselves into Poppy's Pond in jubilant celebration. This triumphant duke at the conclusion of golfing affairs was a cherished tradition until the event that had taken up residency there finally departed to pastures new. But what about one of the over 50s on the United States Champions Tour reprising this plunge into the watery expense that surrounds the 18th green? Well, it appears the intrepid Colin Montgomery would be game. That would make a hell of a photo, wouldn't it, Rosemonte, with a tremendous guffaw, as he imagined himself diving headlong into said pond at the end of next week's Galleri Classic. It's certainly a wonderful notion, and one that conjures up some deliciously eye-popping imagery. I'd love to do it, as that would mean I was a winner, added the indomitable Scott. At the age of 60, good old Monty has not lost any of his lust for golfing life, and his competitive zeal remains undiminished. As he has said on numerous occasions in recent seasons, the moment he stops thinking he can win again, then that will be the time to buy the two Labradors. He's not gone to the dogs yet, though. Oh, bloody hell, there's still plenty in the tank, added the Ryder Cup talisman as he spluttered and scoffed at the mere hint of a suggestion that his winning days were behind him. I actually feel that being 60 is almost like the new 45 or 50. It seems much younger than we used to view it. You would often see it in your own parents. When they were 60, they were perhaps older than we are now. My dad was not flying the world at 60 and going about in hired cars or hopping from hotel to hotel. In a sense, the tour keeps you young. It would be a huge achievement to win in my 60s. And I still think I can. My strength has always been hitting fairways and greens, so I don't need to think about that. I just need a great week putting, and if I can do that, then I have half a chance. It doesn't matter what tour you're on, or what age you are. If you can't hole out, then you won't win. And I want that winning feeling back, because you never lose the desire for it. Another of Montgomery's desires was to have a final crack at qualifying for this July's Open at Royal Troon, the course that was just a neatly dinked wedge from the family home back in the day, and where his dad, James, served as club secretary for many a year. During the 2023 championship, while speaking on an official Open radio broadcast, Montgomery revealed that he would give the 36-hole pre-qualifier a whirl in a nostalgic bid for a last hurrah on home soil. Alas, it won't be happening. I wish the hell it was, but we have a senior major the week of qualifying, and it would be too much to come back and get out to America again, sighed Montgomery, who came through a nail-nibbling qualifier at Gales to earn a tee time for the Open the last time it was at Troon in 2016. While Monty marches on with his campaign on the Golden Oldie circuit, the high hedons of the regular tours continue to seek a silver lining to a gloomy period of turmoil and tumult. Negotiations involving the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour, and the Saudi Arabian Public Investment Fund behind the breakaway LIV series are ongoing. Despite claims that talks are accelerating, there are still more questions than answers. Said Monte, they say it's progressing really well, and you'll know more in August. What the hell is going on? I think there's a lot of work to do in terms of restoring golf's reputation. It's that evil word money. When that gets in the way, I don't think anybody wins. We need to get rid of that and just get back to playing the game of golf. Let's hope we can get a return to a semblance of order, which we had. In my view, golf was not broken. It did not need fixed. But then money got involved, and here we are. And on that note, Monty was off. Poppy's Pond awaits, says Nick Roger. Evening Times, March 25. Hearts to demand answers after club crest defaced by Rangers. Report by David Irvin. Hearts chiefs have vowed to demand answers after their club crest was defaced by Rangers at Tynecastle during the Sky Sports Cup final. Club officials released a strongly worded statement after images on social media showed the club crest in the changing room covered by a Rangers badge. Furious supporters blasted the dressing room branding, prompting Hearts chiefs to clarify the situation and send a message over their wishes being disregarded. Hearts hand over the running of the stadium to competition organisers, the SWPL, on the day of the final. However, they were involved in pre-match planning, and the club states no dressing room branding in either dressing room was approved by the club. Hearts chiefs blasted the club crest being defaced as extremely disappointing, and conceded no explanation over the circumstances will be satisfactory in our eyes or the eyes of our fans. Joe Potter's Rangers women retained the Sky Sports Cup with a 4-1 win over Partick Thistle yesterday. A club statement read, Hearts is aware of images circulating of the Tynecastle Park home dressing room at today's Sky Sports Cup final. Although the club hands over the running of the stadium on the day of the competition, organisers, the SWPL, we were involved with pre-match planning. We would therefore like to assure our supporters that we did not approve any request for dressing room branding in either dressing room for either club involved. It is extremely disappointing to learn that our wishes were disregarded. How this came to be is a matter for the SWPL and Rangers to sort, but needless to say, no explanation will be satisfactory in our eyes or the eyes of our fans. Nevertheless, we will demand answers to ensure that our club crest is never defaced again. It is also regrettable that this action has taken away the focus from what was a successful cup final and another opportunity to grow women's football in Scotland. Report by David Irvin. Evening Times Sport, March 25. McTominay wins SFWA International Player of the Year. Report by Ewan Payton. Scott McTominay has been named the Scottish Football Writers Association Men's International Player of the Year. The Manchester United midfielder was in inspired form for Scotland over the past 12 months, as his goal-scoring exploits played a crucial role in helping the nation qualify for Euro 2024. He scored 7 goals during the qualifying campaign. The 27-year-old will be one of the first names on Steve Clarke's team sheet when he names his lineup to face Germany in the opening game of the European Championships in June. And his performances for both club and country with 9 goals and 3 assists so far this campaign for United, saw the vote overwhelmingly land in his favour. Angus Gunn, John McGinn and Callum McGregor were also shortlisted for the award. Chick Young, president of the SFWA, said, "It was beginning to look like John McGinn had a vice-like grip on the award, so it says so much about the performance level of Scott this season. He won by a street, proving that football writers do know their business. Brilliantly done, Scott. We doff our caps to you. Now the hat-tricks in Germany are on you." McTominay will be presented with his prize at the 2024 Scottish Football Writers Association Player of the Year dinner on Sunday 19 May at the Doubletree by Hilton Hotel, Glasgow. It comes as the midfielder looks set to be offered a new long-term deal at Old Trafford. It would be quite the turnaround for the Scotland international, who was this time last year deemed surplus to requirements. McTominay was open to leaving Old Trafford last summer, with West Ham showing interest in the midfielder and Harry Maguire. He was far from a first pick under Erik ten Hag earlier this season, but after a series of impressive performances off the bench, scoring several vital goals for United. The Scotland player has 9 goals and 3 assists in his 34 appearances so far this season. Only Rasmus Højlund has more goals than him this term. Report by Ewan Payton.
That concludes this week's edition of the Glasgow Times Sports Podcast. Please remember to subscribe to our channels at QN Review and to tell your friends about our service.